Welcome to part two of our interview with Jeff Belanger about haunted New England. When it comes to folklore and people just believing things that they find, especially on social media, it doesn't even have to be paranormal based. An example I can give would be just the other day having to text my mother saying, please delete that post. It'll make you a target for people knowing that you'll believe something that's not real. It was one, right. It was one of those, post this and then a bunch of legal jargon and Facebook can't use your pictures, whatever. You know, it's been going around for years. And I it's like, how did you, you had to have seen this by now. How are you that disconnected or are you not aware? And this is not just my mom. There's thousands of people that do this.
No, it's my mom too.
Exactly. And you go, right. Like, I think I've already told her about this years ago. Like, no, don't get rid of that. It was probably once a year I have to say, get rid of this post. And it's the same post. But what is it about folklore? Because it almost is a type of folklore with society today that people are believing. And then they're reposting it. Is society losing its compass for judgment of fact versus fiction? Or is it just that much more out there in the open that we're all waving our flag of, I can't tell what's real and what's not, much more visibly than it used to be?
So if you go back in time, just say 200 years, 250 years or so, which is nothing on an evolutionary standpoint. Mm-hmm. The amount of people in your world, your whole life, you might meet 100 people, maybe, in your entire life, right? It's your community, your little town, your family first, of course. And that was the amount of people you had to trust or not trust. And when you're in such a tight-knit community, especially if you go back, say, like 1,000 years, you didn't need a whole lot of laws, because if you had 100 people all depending on each other, if you were a jerk, if you stole, if you lied, if you cheated, if you got kicked out of that group of 100, you're dead. You can't survive on your own. So a lot of stuff just kind of worked itself out in those old days. Coming forward through time, the world is shrinking, right? We're now interconnected through media, first radio and print. Well, first print, then radio, and then television. And now the internet, we're bombarded with more information on like a weekly basis than our grandparents would get in 2 years, right? Think of all the messages, the texts, the memes, the news that's fed to you through your phone, through your computer, through your television. We're bombarded with so much information. Our brains have not evolved to the point to process all of it. And we are a information hungry species by nature. We're designed that way to learn all we can and to subdue the world around us. And these great old stories get passed along and we become storytellers, and we connect not only with our past, but with each other when we tell these stories. And that's a wonderful thing. Sit around a campfire and talk about ghosts and monsters and, you know, strange history and stuff like that. And that mechanism hasn't changed out of us, but now we're suddenly doing it with, hey, did you hear that 9/11 was an inside job? Or did you hear that, you know, this conspiracy or that? Or did you hear that Bill Gates is going to give everyone $100 who posts this on Facebook? There's some part of it where you go like, I don't think that's true, but if it is, I don't want to miss out. I want to contribute. So we're still acting in a very tribal way, the way we did, because it's only been a couple hundred years since we were tribes and our brains haven't been able to catch up. And so I think we're so bombarded, so confused, that we're desperate to just put out anything that will either get us attention, validate our worst fears, or our greatest hopes. And it's super easy for a couple of smart people to manipulate us using this medium. Mm-hmm. And so I know it sounds crazy. I really believe these legends can save the world, right? If we can get back to good storytelling where we just talk to each other and say, look, I'm going to tell you about Ephraim Gray, this mad scientist. It's a goofy story. It sounds crazy. But suddenly you go, you know, I know reclusive people who just stay in their house all day, and maybe I should reach out. You know, maybe we should. Maybe Ephraim Gray has a lesson for me today, you know, that I can, you know, look at that kid in class that's, you know, a loner and doesn't want to interact and all this other stuff. I believe that these stories are so, so important because they hit on a real primal part of the human existence. you know, is there life after death? Are we alone in the universe? You know, do we know every creature that walks the earth with us? All of those things are questions that our species has been trying to answer forever. And now it's so crowded with noise from, you know, Facebook posts and fake news and lying politicians and witch hunts and all this other stuff that it's just gets so cluttered. And so I think our challenge is, how do we declutter?
Yeah, that makes sense. Going back to the legends and the ghost stories that encompass the New England area, what for you has been one of the most disturbing legends or ghost stories that you've come across?
Well, there's always the ones of unsolved murders, right? Those haunt us, literally, figuratively, historically speaking, in every way. So like Lizzie Borden, for example, in Fall River, Massachusetts, you know, Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. And when she saw what she had done, she gave her father 41. We teach this nursery rhyme to our kids. But this happened in 1892, in August of 1892, right? Someone took an axe to Andrew Borden and Abby Borden and left them dead. And no one was ever convicted for that crime. It went unpunished. That bothers us. It doesn't matter that everybody involved is dead now. It literally haunts us. And when you go to that house, especially considering it looks like it did in 1892, the owners have taken great care to turn this now bed and breakfast into a museum and into this time portal. You go in there and you're like, man, right there, right where I'm standing, this man was hacked to death with an axe and no one was punished. That'll haunt you. Sure. And of course, sometimes it's quite literal. In that house, people have had all kinds of strange experiences, myself included. That was, oh man, there was a time, this was, had to be 12, 13 years ago at this point, but we were in the house in January and they were shut down for a week for some minor renovations. And the owner was kind enough to let us do a live radio broadcast at night. And so only four of us in the house, were in the basement. And suddenly we hear these two sets of footfalls just go scampering from the side door into the kitchen right above our heads. And all four of us look at each other and go, oh no, some kids from Fall River just broke in. We were trusted with the house. We got to get up there right away, call the cops, whatever we got to do, get them out of here. And so between hearing that noise and getting to the top of the stairs, it couldn't have been more than 6-7 seconds. And you get up there and you look and we saw no one there. And then I went to the door and I check it and it's locked. It's secure just as we left it. And we all look at each other and went, okay, we're 100% certain two people, not one, two, just ran right above our heads. And we are still the only people in this house. And you go, and of course, people were murdered here. So there's that. And the stories continue. And that was just my own experience. There's so many others.
When you have things like that, a location that has lots of legend and lore around it, and of course, many ghost stories around that house, and I'm not going to speak specifically on that property, but more so just in general, when you have a location that has those legends to it, but maybe there really truly isn't a haunting connected to it. Maybe it all is just legend and it all is just people telling stories. Can locations like that later in more so present day become haunted or infested with something you think due to the energy of those who are investigating it and just the sheer amount of people going and saying, this is haunted, we're searching for it. Just that nervous energy that enters a location. Could that end up being the source to create something?
Absolutely. And as evidence of that, I'm going to go back to our Tibetan Buddhist friends who for centuries have talked about something called a tulpa, which is a thought form, meaning that these Buddhists believed you could literally create something that didn't exist to the point where other people could even see it. It's a monster, whatever that thing is, you could manifest it into reality. And we do that all the time in our daily lives. I don't know if you've ever worked in an office, but do you ever have like a crowded office and there's that one person where you look at them and they look at you and you're like, that woman doesn't like me at all. Like I just get dirty looks. She does not like me. I've never even spoken to her. I don't know what's up. I don't know what I did to offend her, but she doesn't like me. And she's over there going, that dude just doesn't like me. I've never even spoken to him. And you've created the reality that you two are at odds and don't like each other. And the scowls continue. And there was based on absolutely nothing, but you have created into reality a conflict that has no reason to be there, yet there it is. And that's just a teeny tiny little example from our everyday lives. We create reality in our monetary system. Every time you reach in your wallet and you pull out paper bills to pay for pizza and beer, it's that paper has no value. You know that, right? I mean, it's just paper, but you believe in it. You have faith in it, and the person receiving it has faith in it, and they're willing to give up their pizza and beer in exchange for your Andrew Jackson picture, right? And that faith, that belief that created that piece of paper into something that's tangible enough for you to eat and drink and for someone else to part with food for it is really, I mean, that's the lesson, right? That's how we can create something into reality. We do that. Sometimes a building just has the right look. It's old, it's decrepit, it's falling apart. It's been around a long time and people are intimidated by it. Did anything happen there? I don't know. I found no record of it, but people get spooky feelings around it because it looks like a horror movie. And kids dare each other to go knock on the door or go inside. And suddenly there's a ghost and we have no idea why. Could it be a tulpa? Could it be something that an entire community of kids created to the point where they're like, oh yeah, that old abandoned house, it must be haunted. Of course it must be haunted. You don't know why. And who's to say that what the rules are, that someone has to die in a house for it to be haunted? I've heard plenty of stories of haunted buildings where there's no record of any death, but it's the people haunting it are related to the people that live there or work there and are still sticking around for reasons we may not fully understand.
Has there ever been a legend for you that you desperately wanted to believe had a factual basis, or even maybe before investigating it did believe, oh yeah, you know, the evidence is over there, but I just haven't, I haven't read into it deep enough yet to fully, you know, grasp it. And then when you started digging into it, turned out that evidence you thought was there really wasn't. And there really was no historical evidence for something that you really thought, well, I really had already accepted this to be somewhat true.
Yeah, that happened recently. I was working on the movie The Conjuring.
Yes.
So that is based on events that took place in a house in Burrville, Rhode Island, which is about 30 minutes from where I live. And when that movie came out, it was funny for me because I watched the movie, which I actually enjoyed, to be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a pretty good, suspenseful, scary movie. But at the same time, I was like, I know every single person being portrayed in this movie.
Yep.
I know Ed and Lorraine Warren. I know the Perrin family. I know, you know, like mm-hmm. I knew them all. And so Ghost Adventures is filming our Halloween special there for this year. In fact, it already happened. And I've been working on Ghost Adventures for 11 years now as their researcher and writer. And so I really got to dig in on this story. And the movie tells a lot. You know, there's this Bathsheba character that's was the villain, was the witch in the movie. And I start digging and going, yeah, there's a Bathsheba Sherman that did indeed live in Burrville, and she's buried. You can go see her grave. But I start looking at census records and everything else, and I'm like, I'm not sure Bathsheba Sherman ever stepped foot inside this house. This particular house, there's no evidence of it. She's not on the census, so she didn't live there. It wouldn't have made much sense for her to work there because she lived like 6 miles away, which is not a big deal by today's standards. But if you were going to commute 6 miles on horseback or walking, that's a long commute, especially in New England weather. So it just wouldn't have made any sense. And so suddenly all these things start to fall apart. I'm not saying the house isn't haunted. Far from it.
Sure.
People have had all kinds of crazy experiences, even including the new owner. So the new owner is a paranormal guy, and he contacted me the second day he was in the house, and he goes, hey, you live nearby, right? I just bought the Conjuring house. He's like, do you want to come over? I was like, yeah, I want to come over. He's like, do you want to come over tonight? Yes, I want to come over tonight. I'll be there at 7. And so it's pretty amazing to go into this house that has inspired something that's globally famous now at this point.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful house. It dates back to the before the country was even founded, you know, so early 1700s, and it's wood beam construction and the stone fireplace and this creepy well in the basement, and you go, whoa, you can feel history here, you know. when this house was built, we weren't even America yet. And you can just get the sense that this thing has seen so much history, almost three centuries of it. And the new owner's talking about strange things that's already happening to him. So I'm sure it's haunted, but the what or the why was based on speculation of a psychic medium, Lorraine Warren, who kind of grabbed a name out of the ether, and we can't find any proof of that. And so that part of it starts to fall apart when you do the historical research.
So with the story of Bathsheba, and I'm trying to remember what, and Andrea Perrin has been on the show several times, lovely yeah. lady, great stories. And, you know, she's very credible in her stories. What is her story? Refresh me with the Bathsheba part of it. Cause doesn't she speak about it, or am I?
Yeah, no, you're right. We had Andrea on the show. We flew her up and she's going to be part of it. So Andrea believes that Bathsheba was not a witch, but was some kind of child caregiver, and a child died in her care, totally an accident, and that's how that whole chain of events got to happen, that she believes that Bathsheba was taking care of a child in the house. Okay. But I found no record of that. So I can't tell you with 100% certainty it didn't happen. Sure. I just could find no record of it whatsoever.
And it's one of those things you have to look at, too. I mean, with the record keeping, we're going back so many years, too. We're wondering, well, what records, you know, would there be in some cases as well? I mean, that has to also go through your mind, too.
Well, in some cases, the records were far better than today.
Really?
So, for example, newspapers back then would say things like, Tony and his family stayed at the such and such hotel for a week to rest and sure. visit his family, Uncle John. And like, that's not put in the public papers anymore, but no. that was very common. So-and-so took a new job. I mean, just this, you know, they'd have columns of the paper that would just be a couple sentences over, you know, everything that's going on with people in town.
Sure.
So actually there were like stuff that we would almost call mundane today was newsworthy back then. And then the census was where you lived. I mean, you had to report where you lived. Not that, I mean, they were taken every 10 years. So not that you couldn't move out 2 years later, live somewhere for 5 years, move back, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. those things are possible. So you could miss the census, but the newspaper reports were more than just like headlines from around the world. Yeah. It was really those newspapers just covered a small town. And so you staying at a hotel actually was news back then.
I completely was not even thinking of that. I remember I used to, just for fun, I have family that was from a town in Wisconsin called Black River Falls, a small town. And even into the early 90s, the local newspaper, the Banner Journal, that was published once a week, still published stories just like that. And yeah. it was comical to read, just because it was like, so-and-so visited so-and-so. And if you got back even into the archives, it got even more into detail. I almost wonder if I were to find some of those old copies and show them to my teenage daughter, she'd be asking, why are there status updates all throughout this newspaper?
Right, that's right. That was Twitter. That was the original Twitter.
It really
Tony
was.
Stayed at the hotel, had eggs for breakfast. Yeah. Right?
Like, it really was. That wraps up part two of our interview with Jeff Belanger about haunted New England. Thank you so much for supporting the program, keeping us on the air, and being a gravekeeper. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.